not to give away the ending of a 210-year-old book.
Hello and welcome to episode 46 of Untamed Shrews Women Talk Theater, presented by the Flagstaff Shakespeare Festival. I'm Becky.
And I'm Dawn.
And I'm Hannah. Today we will be chatting with our good friend Audrey, who will be playing Emma in our upcoming production of Emma. She's awesome. She's a core company member. She's been with us for a long time, and she is quite a lovely human.
And unfortunately, or fortunately, we're going to skip our check-in because we had so much fun talking to Audrey. So we're going to go straight over to Audrey, and I hope you enjoy the conversation.
Hi.
Hi.
Hi. How you doing?
Doing pretty good. Definitely early this morning, but
I'm sorry. We shrews are early risers.
Yeah.
And it's funny because I feel like I'm the opposite. Like as soon as rehearsal ends every night, I'm like, this is when I'm awake and alive.
Yeah. That makes sense for you. That makes sense for you.
Yeah.
Well, I've heard like other people say, like, you know, like rehearsal or a show will come down at like, or will end at like somewhere between 10 and 11. Mm-hmm. But for theater artists, that's like our 6 p.m. for people who work like a quote unquote regular job. So it's like, yeah, I'm ready for dinner. I'm ready to go to the bars. Like,
yes, yeah, I'm ready to like vacuum started. My house, walk my dog. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm like, it feels like your day is like just starting. And then you're also just kind of like, oh, everything I just learned in rehearsal, like I want to go over it again. And like you, in my mind, I'm like, my day is just starting, which is not true at all. But
like, I've been at work since 8 a.m.
Yeah.
Audrey, never have I not identified more. I am done with rehearsal. I am literally like pulling myself into bed. My husband is like, what is happening? I'm like a husk of a human being. Like, there is nothing left.
It's so funny because I never thought about the fact that all of us shrews are early risers, but that's kind of hilarious. We are like all early gals.
I would love to be a later gal. I'd love to be able to sleep past 8 a.m.
I know.
That's not who I am.
I know.
Is it one of the things where it's like the sun wakes you up?
Yeah,
like today I slept in more. I'm at my aunt's house in Utah. I slept in more because she has like the room I always sleep in. This actually isn't it. The room I always sleep in is like a basement room. So it's just really dark. So I always accidentally sleep way longer here than I normally do at home. So I slept in till 7:45.
Yeah.
And I like came up and like apologized. I was like, sorry guys. Like, wow, I really, really took my time this morning.
That's my actual dream, is to sleep in just like a dark, completely windowless room, because I feel like I would sleep. I already sleep with blackout blinds and an eye mask, and I still wake up the second there's like a sliver of sun getting in somehow to my room. But I also feel like, just to get like really personal right off the bat, I also feel like I sleep differently depending where I'm at in my cycle. So like when I'm on my period, I sleep in like until 7:30 or so. And the rest of the time I'm up at
6 a.m.
Man, if I'm ovulating, I'm up at like 5:45. Like, let's go.
Let's do some stuff.
Let's get this day started.
No, that's funny. I actually told that to a friend recently. I was like, when I am like on my period, like if I could sleep the whole day, I think I would.
Yeah.
Like I don't want to move.
No. Yeah. I think that makes sense. I think that totally makes sense. Luckily, Sean and I like seem to always be kind of on opposite, like wanting to sleep in schedules. So usually one of us will be up really early with the kids. And then I'm really early. Our kids are good sleepers. So really early for our
6:30,
kids is 6:30.
Yeah.
And like really average is 7. So I feel like we're pretty lucky.
Well, welcome to Untamed Shrews.
Yeah,
Audrey.
Welcome.
Before we get too into this, Audrey, tell everyone who you are.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Whoa. We missed
we
that.
We got straight into sleeping habits. Through. And again, we are untamed. There's nothing there's nothing we won't talk about.
Okay. So my name is Audrey Young, and I got to Flagstaff because I came here to get my theater degree at Northern Arizona University. I was working at Theatricos, and Don, correct me if I'm wrong, but this is my memory of it. I was in a production of Blithe Spirit, and then right after that, I was in a production of Trip to Bountiful. And after the invited dress of Trip to Bountiful, Don was waiting in the lobby. And I come out and she goes, "I would like to talk to you about a show that we're doing in like September, October." And she was like, "Can I have your contact information?" And then like the next day there was like an offer to be Antonio in The Tempest with like a contract and everything. And I was like, "What?"
What? This is the dream. Oh my gosh.
Straight to offer.
I scouted you.
And I was like, oh, and it had been the only like real Shakespeare I'd done was like I was in Comedy of Errors in college, and so I'm pretty sure my response back was, I don't know if I can do Shakespeare. And Don was like, I think you're gonna be great. Don't even worry about it. And I was like, okay. And then that's like how I got started with Black Shakes.
Nice. That's
Also,
awesome.
Christine was directing that one, so I had no worries at all. I was like, you're gonna be fine. You're gonna be working with the text expert in the world, and she's gonna help you. It'll be just fine. But
And it
really,
was like it was such a good experience.
I think so many actors are scared. I would love to even just hear a little bit more about that, Audrey, because I feel like a lot of actors are scared. And, to me, when you find someone who is really talented, who's really hardworking, who's a good person, like, I think there's absolutely no reason not to be like, yeah, give Shakespeare a try. Like, jump in and give it a try. So, what was it like doing Antonio and like on that learning curve of doing Shakespeare for the first time? Like, how would you recommend it
Bridging
to
the
others?
gap, yeah.
So I mean, I remember going to that first rehearsal and hearing everyone else, speak and feeling like they sounded like they understood every single thing that they were saying. And I was sitting there, having this speech about like trying to convince people, trying to convince Sebastian to, let's kill them all while they're asleep. And I'm like, I don't know what I'm really saying. Like, I can kind of be like, yeah, I think we're trying to kill them. But I was like, 'cause Christine, we were doing like the text breakdown and we were doing like every single line. And she was like, yeah, you understand like the whole chunk, but like, what's this line? And I was like,
I don't
I
know.
have zero idea. And so I know that we had like some one-on-one sessions where it was me and Christine kind of sitting down and breaking down what I was saying. And, then you guys supplied us also with like a packet of like how to understand Shakespeare with like what does the punctuation mean? How does that help you to get through, large chunks of dialogue? How does it show you that there's a break in an idea and it's a new idea and things like that? And I know like I feel like I sat there and just like read through that entire packet and then like had different colored pens that I was like to each of these monologues to be like, this is a new idea and this is this. And it was funny because I left my script one night because we also took that show to Sedona for like a night, I think. And I'd left my script in the car that Christine was in or using. And then she comes back to me and she was like, I've never seen a script have so much just written all over it.
That's amazing.
And I was like, I truly didn't understand what I was doing when I started. So I like went back to like the rudimentary basics to be like, okay, so can I understand any of this?
How are these words pronounced? Okay.
Like, how are they
Awesome.
pronounced? How does this like, how does like the verse versus the prose work? Like, how does all of this work? Like, how am I supposed to do any of this? And I think the big thing too was is I think a lot of times we're so used to hearing Shakespeare in like this elevated voice. So I think sometimes people have this Shakespeare accent that they like put on to stuff. And I know that when I did like that first read, I definitely had that. And Christine was so quick to be like, oh no, but I like your voice.
Yeah. She's always so politic in
So
the way she says
gentle,
things.
yeah. Maybe
She's so
try your
lovely.
own voice.
Exactly. And I was like, oh, okay, so I shouldn't sound like that. She's like, no.
That's awesome.
And how has the, because you just finished playing Cordelia in King Lear. So, now you've been doing Shakespeare for, oh my gosh, 8 years, 7 or 8 years? Wow. So, how has the process changed for you from the first time to like playing Cordelia?
I think, I mean, just in general, reading Shakespeare, I feel like I understand it so much better. Having, access to someone like Christine, has been so helpful, even in when I'm doing things that aren't Shakespeare, even if the language is just slightly more classical, like with Emma right now, is just I understand more from the get-go. I'm also less afraid to ask questions if for some reason I don't understand. I think in the beginning I was like, oh, I shouldn't ask questions because then I look stupid in a room full of really smart people. And then I saw people that I thought were really smart asking questions, and I was like, well, I don't think they look stupid right now. So why do I feel like I look stupid when I ask a question?
Oh, what a
So,
good lesson. Yes. So
I think, just like a willingness to like say when I don't understand something, but then also just doing it for so long, you start to see like patterns and things and themes that come back and things like that. So I think just now after 7, 8 years, not to put time on anything, it's just easier to understand. And I think it's one of those things like if you aren't putting yourself into it, you're not going to get to that point. So you do kind of have to be like, oh no, this is something I'm interested in. So let me even on my free time kind of like explore monologues that maybe I'm not doing in a show, but I would want to know how to do and, to use for callbacks and auditions and stuff. And yeah, so I think just the process of understanding the language has gotten significantly easier. And, with Flag Shakes, I've gotten the chance to play characters that I don't think I would usually get cast as like Festy and even like the Fool. And getting those opportunities, because like I just don't think of myself as a funny person.
You're so funny, Audrey.
What? I don't know why. I think it's because like I usually am like in more dramatic roles. So then when someone's like, here's a comedic thing, I'm like, oh, but I can't do that. Don't do that to me. Don't set me up for failure.
You are
But like,
Sean's favorite fool of all time. He still
oh,
talks about your performance. It's so funny because, of course, you did a beautiful job as Cordelia, but Sean talks about you as the fool in Lear constantly. Remember when Audrey did this? Remember when Audrey said that? Remember when
thank
Audrey, wasn't that funny? And I'm like, yeah, she was really
That's so cute.
good.
I'm biggest fan.
Huge
That's so
fan.
funny. But it's like getting these opportunities to kind of like explore that has been really helpful too, just because I do think it's something that like not every company would be like, oh yeah, she's a Festy or she's the Fool. So getting that opportunity has been really helpful, as well as in learning to like love and enjoy Shakespeare.
Yeah, cool. Well, thanks for just like sidelining on that whole thing because I was like, oh, this is so interesting. It's easy for me to just see things from my perspective. And, at that time I was like, oh, put Audrey in the play. She's a good actor. But then I missed the whole process because I wasn't your director and I wasn't your text director. And I just kind of did throw you to the wolves. I was like, here you go. I mean, not to the wolves because Christine is the farthest thing from a wolf. And I knew that she would take good care of you, but that's awesome to hear like the progress of it and to see how it goes for other people. I know I had an interesting introduction to Shakespeare where I was just such an avid reader as a little girl, and my first exposure was reading Romeo and Juliet, and I don't know what it was, but I think maybe at that point I didn't have any notion that I shouldn't understand it. Like no one had, like I was lucky enough to have never had it re like taught to me as if it was something elevated and this and you know, and so kind of like you, what we were saying with your speeches about or with your speech, you know, where you were saying, oh, let's kill them in their sleep. Like, I think I read Romeo and Juliet and I was like, oh, I get the gist. Like, I understand what's happening here and it's really exciting. Like, this is super fun. And then I just watched enough of it to really have it be something that was pretty easy for me to understand when I like genuinely jumped into it in grad school. I was like, oh yeah, I get it. This is totally easy. But it's I think it is just that exposure over time to Shakespeare and just hearing it. But yeah, now Hannah and Becky, now I'm curious about both of your. I've never asked this question of any of the three of you, which is just baffling to me. But like Becky, when was your like first Shakespeare production, and what was it like for you to get familiar with Shakespeare?
Yeah, so my first Shakespeare production that I worked on, I was the SM, and I was working with like grad students who had like a whole, I don't know, semester or year of like classical Shakespeare, and I was like freshly out of college, and of course I'd studied Shakespeare and like did like scene work, Shakespeare scene work. But that was my first, I guess, yeah, professional experience with it. And then performing was with Flag Shakes. And I remember that year, I was like, my goal is to like do a Shakespeare. I think, I don't know. I was a couple years out of college. And, but for a couple years, I was like, I'm not smart enough for Shakespeare. And I think it goes back to Audrey, what you were saying, like, I don't want to look dumb in front of people who are like quote unquote experts. But yeah, it is like putting the work into it. Like once, and this isn't something that I've done before, until I started working with Flag Shakes, doing that like very specific text work of going like not just line by line, but word by word. And even the words that you think you know what they mean, look them up in like the Shakespeare lexicon, like the specific Shakespeare dictionary. Because it might not mean what you think it means. And then once I started doing that, I was like, oh, this makes so much sense. Or I can be like, hey, I'm actually really confused at what this line says because I thought it was this, but then I looked this up, but now it kind of contradicts. So I'm like, what's going on here? So yeah, just like doing the work, I guess. I don't know. I don't know. There are still moments where I'm like, I'm so nervous to like for people to if they ask me what my thoughts are, but I don't know. It kind of sounds like everyone maybe has a little bit of that, unless you're Don and you had no preconceived notions of
I don't
what you should think.
know. I had a very weird childhood. My dad read me Great Expectations in the fourth grade. So like I had a very weird childhood. I was always exposed to this kind of heightened language. But yeah, what about you, Hannah?
I did Shakespeare in high school, both as obviously the average public school reading of Shakespeare and like through the theater department. But I think I was just so blessed to attend a school where Shakespeare was very important. So I'm literally here in Utah now, but I came to visit my aunt and uncle when I was a teen, and they were like, you should look at this school that is next to our, like, very close to our house. And I had come to Utah to visit them, but had never, like, considered going to school here. And so I went and looked at this school. I was like, oh, interesting. Part of this school is the Utah Shakespeare Festival. They also had a musical theater BFA, which was very important to me. I didn't want, like, I was being so elitist. I did not want a musical theater BA. I wanted a musical theater
No,
BFA.
I
So
know.
specific. I don't know why it
No,
mattered quite so much.
Hannah, I remember the exact same thing in undergrad. I was like, it must be a BFA, not a BA. And now it's like, gosh, I look at actors' resumes and I'm never
Like,
like,
I just
oh,
don't care. I
they
just
have a
don't
BA.
care.
Like, it's so
Well, no, I
funny. I
don't
remember.
even have a BA. I have a BS in theater.
You're the second person I know who has a BS in theater.
That's
I can't
amazing,
remember what the other school
Audrey.
is. But wait, I just want to say, because I remember being like doing programs in high school and like people being like, is a BFA like better than a BA? Like, blah, blah, blah. And how like some of the instructors would be like, well, if it comes down to two actors and one of them has a BFA and the other has a BA, they're probably going to go for the BFA. And it's like, I don't
I've
think
never
that's
made a
actually
decision that
true.
way. Never.
Yeah. Oh,
And
2013
I
theater
know.
programs.
I've never even been like,
What
oh,
an
this actor has
experience.
an MFA and this actor has a BA. I've just been
Yeah.
like, are they
Are they
good? Are
good?
their references good?
Yeah. Yeah.
Do people
So,
like them?
yeah,
Sorry,
exactly.
so go
Are
ahead.
they gonna
Nice
show
to
up to
work
work
with.
on time?
Yeah.
Totally. So I just remember being very intrigued by theater, or by theater, of course, duh. Being very intrigued by Shakespeare, but specifically wanting a degree in musical theater. But that is what I loved about SUU, is that I knew that I was gonna get really rich Shakespeare training, but technically my degree would be in musical theater. And we had this awesome thing where we would get like a student pass to go to all the Utah Shakes shows for like $30. So I would pay $30.
Amazing.
I could see every show an unlimited amount of
How?
times.
Damn.
Unlimited amount of times. So
That's
for
amazing.
4 straight years, I would see, and their productions run all the way into October. So we would all come back in August, and I would have several months where I would like daily go with my friends to a professional theater company almost every day.
Wow.
And I would see certain productions over and over and over again. Like I saw, they did the Henriad in order like year after year. And I just got to watch as many times as I wanted for, three, and they just kept going. And I was like, it was essentially like not even a crash course because it was over a long period of time, but I
Yeah.
really just got immersed in like what it was like to work and be near a Shakespeare festival. I worked in the education department of the Shakespeare Festival for several years, and we would go into local Utah schools and teach Shakespeare to kids. So like I was taught Shakespeare, obviously by my professors, but I was also taught how to teach Shakespeare. So I was
Oh.
taught movement and all that stuff, like heightened realism, all those things, like, and I was taught how to teach those to kids. So I feel like I mean, just such fond memories of being able to watch such incredible actors do these shows. And especially like as a kid who I was mostly seeing youth productions or local productions, like I remember when I was like 16 or 17, my parents like splurged and we all went to go see the Broadway tour of Mamma Mia. And that was
Wow.
huge. Like that was huge, huge. Like we didn't get to see a lot of professional theater growing up. So me being able to see professional theater 6 times a week, as many times as I wanted to, was
Damn.
crazy. So I feel like I kind of had the privilege of going into my professional life having seen a heck of a lot of Shakespeare. And having a program that really valued Shakespeare and having already been able to perform and teach Shakespeare by that point, I think really set me up for success by the time I entered the world. Not that I was all that great, but I at least knew what Shakespeare was. You know what I mean? Like, I definitely had so much to learn, of course. Like, I definitely know that when I got to Flagshakes, the approach the Flagshakes took was different than SUU took. But I at least had a really good foundation of Shakespeare. So anyway, that was a really long story for not a very long story, but that
Oh.
was my experience.
Oh,
That's
I'm
so
enjoying
cool.
hearing this all so much. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, I just love that they had a student pass for $30 a
I
year.
literally just
What?
made a mental note to myself. I was like,
Yeah.
reach out to Kathleen McKeever and offer her that we should be doing a $30 pass for NAU students who
Yeah.
are theater majors or minors. I was like, okay,
Yeah.
gonna do that now,
Right.
especially now that
Like,
we have Beaver Street and it's so walkable
right. Yeah. It is.
from NAU. I think I'm like, wait, why aren't we doing this?
But I think specifically what was important about this pass is that not only were we seeing the shows, we could rewatch the shows as many times as we wanted.
Yeah.
So it
Yeah, I
wasn't
know.
just I get one ticket to see
Yep.
Comedy of Errors. I can see Comedy of Errors 14 times.
Yeah. Yeah.
We
When
got the worst seats, but that's okay.
Yes.
I like I saw it 14
Yep.
times,
Yeah.
so trust me, I eventually saw it from
You
every
got every
angle.
angle. Yeah.
Now, was it like day of only, or could you reserve a
It
seat?
was, and it was
Okay.
literally like at half hour. Like
Oh,
you,
yeah.
so
Okay.
we had to show up to the theater. Like all the tickets have already been sold that are gonna be sold. And we would walk in like 5 minutes before the show began. And sometimes we would get amazing seats because they didn't sell. But sometimes we would be at a very packed show. But like, I remember, gosh, now I'm just musing. But I saw Peter and the Starcatcher probably like 16 times. And that show just really like showed me what was always in my brain, which was, why isn't movement in a show more important than just dance? And when I saw Peter and the Starcatchers, I was like, this is everything I've always imagined. And so like, because they like make the boat with their bodies, they do everything themselves, and I was like, why don't more things do, like more people do this? And then I found Flag Shakes, and that's exactly what they do. And I was like, oh great, this works out for me.
Yeah, that's exactly what we do.
Like, I didn't know people did that because I grew up in youth theater where there were sets and there are costumes and there are props. Anyway,
So
yeah.
the in the American Shakespeare Center does the same thing for grad students. They let you see as many shows as you want to for free. But you have to sit wherever you can. And I just have to tell this quick, cute story about Christine. And then, Audrey, we're going to move to talking about Emma.
Yes, we
But
must. We must.
so when I first met Christine in grad school, she still wasn't even fluent in English, right? Like she was pretty good and she learned it through theater, through undergrad, but she hadn't even started speaking English till she moved to America for
Whoa,
undergrad. And
crazy.
she learned it stage managing because she just
What?
listened to Christmas Carol over and over and over again. But she and I would go, and she was so adorable. She would bring her complete works of William Shakespeare, like her Norton anthology, and we would sit up in the balcony, and we would sit below the balcony where no one in the audience could see us. Like, you know,
Oh,
there's
you
like
would
the
just
balcony.
listen.
That we would sit underneath the balcony railing so we could see through the slots to the stage, but we were like obscured from anyone else seeing us. And Christine would just sit there with her Norton, flipping every page as the actors were talking and just reading along with what they were saying in Shakespeare. And like, I it's such an incredible thing to me because just kind of to tie it back to what we've been talking about, right? This idea that like, this Shakespeare knowledge is innate, or if you're asking questions, you're not smart, or you know, like it's so hard to learn. Like, imagine like Christine going from not speaking English at all till undergrad to coming to study Shakespeare for a 3-year program and just sitting with it so long, going to so many productions, reading it so much that by the time she left grad school, you know, she goes on to work at the Globe teaching.
Damn.
Teaching British English speakers what Shakespeare means.
Right. Like, look at her
I
go.
know. Anyway, just to brag on Christine for a second, but I still have that image so clearly in my head as like the cutest thing I've ever seen in my life. Just Christine crouched next to the railing, just like paging through
Damn.
as the actors speak the words out loud. But yeah, that's an incredible thing, and that really inspired me to reach out to NAU and be like, hey, how about a $30 unlimited pass for your students and they can come see, you know, anything we do at Beaver Street Theater, not just Flag Shakes, because now we bring in some things and stuff like that. Be cool.
Audrey, tell us a bit about how I know it's only been a week. But tell us a bit about how Emma has been. And the main thing I would like to know specifically is just how you are keeping your energy up. Because, Emma hardly leaves the stage. I'm not sure if she ever does. And obviously, the memorizing load is very large. She's basically like the Hamlet of Jane Austen. So, how are you, how has Emma been going, and how are you kind of tackling that aspect?
Emma's been going really well. I mean, I think it's to be led by someone like James, who's our director. He sets like the tone in the room to just be full of joy. And I think that's what he said, like on our first and like second rehearsals, maybe, is that like he wants it to be a joyous experience for all of us. So, we're open to making big choices. And if we need to be reeled back in because it got too big, he will reel us back in.
Which is rare with James. He's like, no,
Yeah, go
more.
bigger,
More.
bigger, bigger.
More silly.
So it's been amazing. We've blocked the entire show now.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah.
Damn.
And I think that was the thing is we did not have rehearsal last night, which would have been a Friday. Our last rehearsal was Thursday. So that was when we kind of finished. We did all of Act Two on Thursday.
Wow.
Yeah. And T acknowledged that all of us were very slap happy, and but he was also there with us. He's like, all of us are a little giggly and a little loud tonight.
Goofy, goofy is what he likes,
Yes,
or how I
exactly.
know he would like to say. Yeah.
And so, but it's like one of those things where it's like you just feel so able to make a choice, and it's not a wrong choice. It might not be a right choice, but he's not going to tell you it was wrong. And so, yeah, the days have been long. It's felt like, I think with the script, it's this beautiful, like, combination of like classic and contemporary. And I think that James is really leaning into that as well with how some of like Emma's asides go and things like that, as well as with like our movement within like the space. It's not like restricted to like the idea of like your back is always straight and you're like, sitting properly in this chair and everything. It's like he is like, you can slouch a little bit so that, everyone can see you and you can don't think that like, oh, this like it is Regency period, because like we are using super modern music as well. We're using some Katy Perry, we're using some Carly Rae Jepsen.
Charli
Amazing.
XCX.
Yeah, there's gonna
Lil
be a
Brat.
RuPaul song during the Christmas bit. We just found out on Thursday he played it for us because all of us were like, we don't think we know that song. And so it's truly just been like a really great experience, and I'm excited to start learning dances and things like that. But yeah, the rehearsal room has been filled with laughter and just like so much fun and so much joy and so much experimentation that while I am tired after the first week, I am excited to go back tomorrow. So, and that's
Totally.
always like a good feeling to have. Sometimes you end your first week and you're just like, ooh, I could use a week off now.
No, I totally get you. I actually, so I have a couple nights a week that I'm excused for Ariel, and I actually was like, I miss everybody. Like, I was like, I really wish I could be there. Obviously, like, I love being at the Ariel studio. But I was like, oh, I miss everyone. And like everyone, obviously we left on Utah, left to go to Utah, like I said, for our little weekend off. But like everyone got together last night to like watch a movie, and I was like, oh, I want to be with everybody because it's just like a really good crew. And yeah, he's just like, James is just so silly and fun. And he says, because I've done several shows with James, his joy spiel is a strong word. Like, that makes it sound negative. His joy thing that he says, like, he does that for every show. And
Mantra.
it's like very important to him. And that's what makes James just such an amazing director, because I just think he makes everyone giggle and laugh and comfortable. And every show, like, even with its dramatic moments, he just finds like a way to so like lightly, I don't know. Yeah, everything just feels light with James. It's very like your burdens are light. Everything just feels easy and casual. Ne Nothing ever feels like scary or like he's mad at you or like, yeah, you did something wrong. Like, it's always just like, oh, that was good. Let's try this instead. And it just never feels like you're like, I've messed up, you know? Like, it's just always just like casual and easy, which is just so nice working with him.
Yeah, it's also so interesting because we're doing the show in the round.
Ooh. I didn't know that.
Oh,
Okay.
yeah, so we're doing
Yes.
it in the round.
Oh. It's James's
Yeah.
favorite.
James's favorite.
That's what he told us. He was like, if I can get a show in the round, it will be in the round. It's also so like I've done a couple shows with directors in the round, and sometimes when they circle you as you're performing, it gives that feeling of like shark in the water.
Oh,
Yeah, and you're just like,
predatory.
okay, so like please stop.
Literally feeling attacked.
Yeah, I'm like, okay, so you're getting closer, it feels like.
You're
But
on
with
stage with me now.
yeah, okay, get off, thanks. But with James, It never feels that way because, like, when you do catch him, like, out of the corner of your eye, he's always like pleasantly
Laughing.
happy. Yeah, like he just has like the smallest like little smirk on his face.
Yes.
Because there was a moment the other night where he kind of like just let us continue to like work through a scene. He kind of gave Chris, who's playing Knightley, his entrance, and then we just kind of did
Ran.
the scene, and he didn't like stop us at any point, but he was just kind of like circling around, and just like I would catch his like his face a little bit, and he it would just be like the smallest little like smirk, and his eyes are also so full of joy all the time when you look at James. And but then like when that scene was over and more people needed to enter, he was like, "You don't need to change anything about that. That was just beautiful, and you guys are both in the moment, and I liked it." And it was one of those things where it was just like, "Oh, like you like I watched someone enjoy watching me." Did that make sense? And I feel like sometimes when you're in like the very beginning of rehearsals, you're just like, I'm making mistakes. I know for a fact that as we're going through the script, I am stumbling over words. The amount of times I've changed obliged to obligated, my brain just sees like the first chunk of that word and is like, go ahead and toss this in there.
No need, no need.
And
Let's move on.
yeah, and so like I feel like there's been so many times that I've like stumbled over words, and just because Emma does speak so much that I'm just like, sorry guys, I've messed up this chunk again because I can't get the right words out of my mouth. And he, is just always just like, to go back to his like joy thing, he's filled with so much joy that, when you do get that moment to kind of just like he lets you explore in your own, I don't know,
Yeah, your own
like
time.
yeah, your own time. You're in this moment with that other actor, and he's not breaking it up. He's like, just go ahead and feel it, and I'll stop you if it doesn't work. Just being able to like have that like freedom is really nice too. Like, there's like a trust there. That's what it is. There's a trust between your director and you and your other castmates, and it's amazing that that's already happened after
One
five
week.
days. Yeah.
And there's just like such silly moments. Like, I don't want to give away too much, but there's like a moment that we were working on the other night where it was like a movement section where like people were representing an inanimate object, which is also very James and similar to the Peter and the Starcatchers conversation. But literally, James was like, "This is becoming a three-act play, and never have I been happier." And it was like we are listing these people as the inanimate object, like in the program, and it's just like it's just so funny. It's just so funny. It's just so silly. Everyone's having a great time. We're all just giggling and like making jokes, and it's just so much joy all the time. It's
So
just so
I'm
much joy.
curious, because the script was written by local playwright Matthew Wyndham. How, like, what is unique about that? Like, the playwright lives here in town. Like, has Matthew been to any rehearsals? Is there anything like, hey, actually, like, yeah, this little moment that maybe in the script was like a one-liner kind of thing, we'd love to expand upon it. Like, has there been any interactions like that?
Yeah, so he was there on our first read through. And that night, I think all of us got like an email with some sort of line change. So I know that I had like a chunk of dialogue about Jane Fairfax that mentioned her being an orphan, and it was a pretty long chunk that was very much mean about how her birth, like her, like her, her being an orphan and her not having a family, and how that means nothing is going to happen for her, and best of luck in life. And
Oh
once I read it, like I think we took a break maybe like 5 minutes later, and I could already hear Matthew talking to James, being like, "I don't think that that works. I think we should get rid of that. That shouldn't be here." So then that night, I got an email that was like, "Hey, we're cutting that like chunk, and you're still going to mention that she's an orphan, but all you're going to say is that like all she can really become is a governess. And that's just going to be where you leave it, instead of being like, no matter what she accomplishes, she will never be anything more than an orphan, and she will never accomplish truly anything. It doesn't matter that she's playing the piano. Like, she is just an orphan.
Yeah, just like completely prejudiced. Yeah,
He was
like
like, let's tone it
insane.
down.
Some of the things Emma says though is pretty bad. Like when she's like all the sections with Robert Martin about him being a farmer. Oh my gosh, when you're like a farmer,
A farmer.
you mean you think I would know his name? It's like 'cause she's like, "Do you know Robert Martin, your neighbor who's a farmer?" And then you're like, "A farmer? Why would I
Why
know
would I know
literally
him?
any farmer in my near vicinity?" And
Yeah.
it's like your line is really like, "He may have passed me 50 times, but why would I have noticed him?" I'm
It's
like,
him.
"Ah." Like, oh my
Or
gosh,
even,
she's
you know,
so
when
mean.
Harriet, when Harriet's like, I think I love him. And she's like, well, then you'd never be able to hang out with me because I could hang out
Yes.
with the wife of a farmer.
It's just so much. It's just too much. Emma is so mean sometimes.
Yeah, well,
Gracious.
that leads into just
Yeah.
one of the questions, like what are some of the things that you maybe like see in yourself with Emma, and what are some things where you're like, whoa, I feel like very, I don't want to say like distance, but like maybe this
Yeah.
isn't the most positive character trait for Emma.
I mean, I think as a character, and I think like as me, I would say that like I'm unapologetically myself, and I would say Emma is unapologetically herself. I would say that that's like a double-edged sword a little bit, because like Emma truly will never like apologize for anything she's done wrong. In the script, she's even like, I know that I did wrong. You can scold me. But she's not going to be like,
Yeah,
sorry
there's no sorry. She's
that
like, you can tell me I was wrong, but still don't
I did that wrong. And
care.
even at the end, you know, not to give away the ending of a 210-year-old book, you know, when Harriet is like, I do think I'm going to go away with, you know, Robert Martin. Please don't be mad at me. She's like, oh, I could never be mad at you. Why would you think I would ever be mad at you? You know, what do you mean? And
Because
it's
I've
like, be
literally told you that I would be mad at you.
Yeah,
That's
because the build up to you, me trying to get you not with
show.
Robert Martin was that I would never talk to you again if you ended up with him. So of
Yeah.
course you would think at the end, and instead of being like, hey, I'm so sorry that like I led you astray, she's just like, oh my gosh, no, I'm so happy for both of us.
Wait, you know what this reminds me of? You know, have you ever seen like those memes or whatever, where it's like when your best friend breaks up with her boyfriend, you're like, oh my gosh, I never liked him. And then she's like, well, actually, we're thinking about getting back together. And you're like, yeah, totally, babes.
Yes.
You're like,
Or
oh
like
my gosh,
what?
he was the worst. He treated you so badly. I hated him. Oh yes, he's so great. I really hope it works out.
Yeah. Or like I've seen one where it's like you at your
Like,
best
just
friend's wedding,
yeah.
and then it's like you know that the night before you were talking badly about her, who she's about to marry.
And then you stand beside her and then you give her
You're
the
like,
like the speech and you're like, I remember when she met Chad, and you're just
yeah.
like, oh my gosh. Sorry to derail us yet again.
No.
No,
No,
it's okay.
no. But yeah, I would, I mean, I love that she clearly cares for her father. I do love that she, I think, truly loves Harriet. And that's something that like James and kind of mentioned the other night at rehearsal is that he feels like the true driving force of this story is this friendship between these two girls. It's not, you know, necessarily the love story between Emma and Knightley or, you know, Harriet and Martin or Harriet and Elton or any other of the matchmaking that Emma tries to do. Like, it really is watching these two girls become best friends. Because at the top of the show, Emma doesn't know Harriet. And then she sees Harriet and is like, I would like to befriend this individual. And it's kind of watching that blossom. And I think that's the thing too, is even at like the end, they truly do feel like equals. Whereas like it does feel like there are multiple times throughout the show where Emma tries to, I don't know if put people in their place is like the correct verbiage for that, but she does like to remind people of what their status is and truly like what their match equal is. Like, you need to remember where you are at because that is the where you have to stay. And so I think going back to thinking that like her and Harriet are really this like core relationship of what Emma is.
Yeah. And essentially, at the beginning of the show, Emma loses her best friend, essentially, who was technically her governess, but she loses Miss Taylor, who was her best friend and who she spent time with every day. And so I do think that, especially since Emma mentions not being interested in being married, and she's really just not interested in romance, at least at the top of the show, she is craving that female friendship. And she loves her dad, which is great, but she does need, like, that constant bosom friend, as we say, and I think she finds that in Harriet. And Harriet's just so opposite from her. She's quiet, she's, kind of like the traditional female character that we think of in Jane Austen, where she's amenable and, she follows rules and all that stuff. And Emma is more of the one who breaks out of those molds in the Austen world. And I think they find such a nice, yeah, they just find such nice foils in each other that I think they do both grow each other. Emma bring makes Harriet, grow up a little bit and find her own voice, and then of course Harriet, I think, makes Emma realize her prejudices and, is like, Emma, you're really not being very nice, but Emma does have such great qualities as well, So I do think that they kind of rough each or they smooth each other's rough edges, which is really nice, and I like that. That's
I
really
love that
nice.
that's what James is focusing on, because, as soon as you started talking about it, I was like, oh yeah, Harriet teaches Emma humility and Emma teaches Harriet self-confidence. And at the end, they've exchanged a bit of that and become both, better, more well-rounded humans because they're able to meet in the middle. So it's like, it's obviously not a smooth road, but nothing we learn about ourselves is a smooth road.
Yeah. And I think that's the thing too, is, at the end, Knightley congratulates Emma for, being able to kind of mold Harriet into what she is. And she says, like, no, Harriet was always good. Like, I didn't really have to do a lot. And, even like Elton at one point is like, oh, your hand has clearly been, has clearly drawn her out. And she's like, no, like, it was everything was already there that I needed. Like, it truly is that all she had to do was like give Harriet confidence, because Harriet was already good in every other respect except that.
Yeah, so
Oh, so
cool.
lovely.
I
Yeah.
know. Well, thanks for
Any.
chatting with us about Emma, RJ. It's amazing. I hope everyone who's listening comes to see it. I've been telling everyone how fantastic it's going to be. Ticket sales are already a little bit off the hook, so if you're
Hell
planning to
yeah.
come, get your ticket to come. It's going to be so fun, but it's going to be packed. So you want to get your tickets. And then also, if you want to hang out with the characters off stage, you can come to the Emma's Regency Ball, which is going to be at Reardon Mansion, and it's going to be so fancy and fun. Yeah, so that's great. But I'm just so grateful for you for being here and chatting with us, Audrey.
Thank you for
Yeah,
having
thank you.
me.
Of course.
Wait, one more thing. Audrey, how can people find you? So say someone listens to this episode and wants to catch up with you, chat with you, hire you, etc. How can they find you?
So I have a website that is www.officialaudreyyoung.com, and that is also my Instagram handle without the www and .com. So you can find me on Instagram at officialaudreyyoung.
Nice. Awesome.
You could also stalk her at the show and hire her in the lobby.
Yes,
That's true. I'm
I can.
on
As demonstrated
hold
by Dawn.
on. Lovely. Awesome. Well, thank you so much for joining us, Audrey. It was so lovely. Especially just since we've all known each other for so long. It's like just getting coffee with a friend over here on Untamed Shrews. So thank you for joining us. Thanks for listening to this month's episode of Untamed Shrews. I'm Hannah.
And I'm Dawn.
And I'm Becky. Join us for our next episode in January with Matthew Windham to discuss playwriting. Follow Untamed Shrews on our Instagram at Untamed Shrews Podcast and on the Flagshakes website. All episodes of Untamed Shrews can be found wherever you get your podcasts, as well as on sunsounds.org.
Please subscribe to the podcast, leave us a review, put us in your Instagram stories, donate at flagshakes.org/donate, become a podcast sponsor, or buy Shrew Crew merch. Help support the Shrew Crew.
This episode of Untamed Shrews, starring Hannah Johnson, Don Tucker, Becky Zaritsky, and Audrey Young. Show art by Calliope Lou Decker. Podcast theme song by Cadence Lamb. Podcast produced and edited by Hannah Johnson. And presented by the Flagstaff Shakespeare Festival.
Bye, guys.
Bye. Bye.